Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors. We never have any guest hosts, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And it's good to have everyone here as we trip forward into the new year. Stumbling, tripping, running, rushing forward into the new year. This is not our first show of the new year, but kind of feels like it because we've been overtaken by events here at the McBurney compound. What with the adoption of the third dog, which was... I'm not going to say it was a mistake yet, but it was a complicating factor. But so far, so good. All right, let's get to the news. The events of the week. Have you been watching the hearings? The hearings with the new president's potential secretaries of cabinet secretaries. There's been hearings. And so in honor of Kristi Noem and her hearing and the In honor of Kristi Noem, we will open up with our first story of the week. How much of the world's plastic waste actually gets recycled? That's right. This is from Zero Hedge. How much plastic waste actually gets recycled? Whatever makes it past Kristi Noem and she doesn't inject into her face, how much of that actually gets recycled? It turns out not a whole lot. And the story is that now Zero Hedge is accused of being a right-wing, conservative, conspiratorially oriented financial website. But they've gone all in on this idea that, well, let me just read the articles from Saturday, January 18th. The United States is the world's largest plastic polluter, recycling a mere 5% of its household plastic waste. The rest of the world does slightly better, but shockingly, a staggering 91% of plastic waste is still incinerated, landfilled, or mismanaged. And then they put in parentheses, dumped into the ocean. So the average moron, which is pretty much everyone, reading the article comes away from that first paragraph thinking that 91% of the plastic on Earth is being dumped into the ocean. But they said incinerated first. And then they said landfilled, where 90.9% of it is going. That's that 90.9% is going into landfills or is being incinerated. But they put the ocean in there just to panic the kiddos. I'm not sure why they put the ocean in there, because there's some plastic in the ocean. That's not a great thing, I'm sure. But to imply that 91% of the plastic is being dumped into the ocean is just it's immoral. It's unethical for the reporters at Zero Hedge or anywhere else to do that, but they did that. They go on to say the recycling system. The global recycling system, and especially the recycling system in the United States, is deeply flawed. Most plastics are incompatible, making sorting costly and inefficient, and blah, blah, yada, yada. They go on and on and how terrible this all is and how bad we should feel about it. And then they ask the question toward the end of the article, what can be done? There's not that much more room in Kristi Noem's face or body for... certainly not for the volume of plastic we're talking about here. What can be done? The reporter for Zero Hedge, or I don't think Zero Hedge has reporters, for wherever they got this article. The reporter says, what can be done? Bans, a global treaty, phasing out fossil fuel subsidies, huh? And implementing responsibility programs for plastic producers. In other words, communist tyranny should be installed because we should all feel terrible about plastics and install communists too. That's it. And this is an article in an alleged right-wing conservative economics-oriented website, Zero Hedge. And this is going to be a theme for the show this week, is that conservatism is now full-on liberal, and our enemies are pretending to be our friends. All right. Now, let's go on, though, for some comic relief. Let's go to Pete Hegseth, which is, it's almost comical that a guy on Fox News with a We the People tattoo on his forearm is the best choice for Secretary of Defense. But that's where we are, apparently. Anyway, Pete Hegseth is quoted by Rumble on a Rumble video saying, quote, this is in regards to his hearing. He got a hearing before the Senate there. And Pete Hegseth said, quote, "May the will of Jesus Christ be done regardless of the outcome," unquote. Pete implying that the will of Jesus Christ has something to do with his hearing in front of the Senate. And no one in Christendom, no one in the Senate for sure, no one on Fox News, and no one in the conservative talk land, and no Christian that I'm aware of, has made Pete Hegseth aware of the fact that the will of Jesus Christ has nothing to do with your hearing in front of the Senate, or who is the Secretary of State. And by the way, for you to imply it does is blasphemous. So just watch yourself there, Pete. Okay. And so I'm convinced that most of evangelical Christianity believes that the will of Jesus Christ is present in whatever happens at Pete Hegseth's hearing, because they're all shallow, carnal, biblically illiterate lightweights. And I guess that's all you can say about that. So, Peter, please. Yeah, I mean, wow. The ego of some, of not just some people, of almost all people, I guess. All right. Now, meanwhile, over in Japan, now that Donald Trump is possibly going to be inaugurated and not killed and not thrown in prison, not killed, but allowed to be inaugurated, you can expect to see more stories like this seep into the mainstream media. This is from Slate News. Top scientists in Japan are reporting that the risk of heart failure goes up by 4,900% after receiving the COVID mRNA vaccine injection shot. A 4,900% increase in the risk of heart failure. For those of you who may not be familiar with math, that is a statistically significant increase. The article goes on. The discovery was made by a team of Japanese researchers working for right-wing conservative QAnon. No, actually, they were working for the Division of Pharmacodynamics at Keio University Faculty of Pharmacy and Yokohama General Hospital, not known to be allies with white right-wing QAnon conspiracy theorists or anti-vaxxers or vaccine hesitancy, misinformation, disinformation purveyors. That's actually Yokohama General Hospital. And the thing is the doctors are freaking out because there's a lot of people having heart attacks. And now they've documented the risk of myocarditis is 20 to 50 times greater after receiving the shot, by the way, for which Donald Trump is responsible. And you're going to start hearing that. Now that, especially if the impending clinical event surrounding the mechanism of action that is the threatening mechanism of the mRNA and the spike protein and all that stuff, now that the people have had the shot in them for 4 years now, as this clinical event starts to take place, Donald Trump will be a handy dandy blame reservoir. Anyway, the doctors who put together the data, they calculate a 95% confidence interval for the association between the vaccines, Donald Trump's vaccines, by the way, and myocarditis and pericarditis. So they're pretty confident that there's a connection. And I'm very sad for everyone who took that shot and who, it's just very sad. And I hope all of this is not correct and everybody's going to be just fine. That's what I hope. Meanwhile, if you think you're going to be just fine, just sit down and wait and see, because bird flu detection is through the roof. That's right. This is from the widespread file. Bird flu is widespread. It's so widespread that a case has been identified now in a commercial poultry operation for the first time. That's since the current outbreak in 2022. That's the one we're all afraid of. I mean, we're supposed to be afraid of it. We've been trying to be afraid of it. We've been having a hard time being afraid of it. But there are people on the case right now to make sure that somebody gets afraid of it, and darn quick. That's right. So we have the Georgia Department of Agriculture, the GDA, along with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the USDA. That's a lot of D's and A's. They say they've confirmed the presence of H5N1. That's the strain of the highly pathogenic avian influenza. Highly pathogenic. That's right. It's been spotted there in Elbert County, Georgia. This marks the fifth incident involving the virus in Georgia's poultry flocks and the first occurrence within a commercial setting. And you know what that means? Well, I'm going to tell you what that means. That means that the USDA and the GDA, along with the governing officials in the state of Georgia, have halted all poultry-related events, including, listen to this, exhibition shows, swaps, swap meets, and sales until further notice. So they tucked that in at the end. You're not allowed to sell poultry in the state of Georgia right now. Wow. Which, that's kind of a big deal. I mean, you might not think it's a big deal. Trust me, that's a big deal. Okay, so the H5N1, just in case you're not scared enough, let me frighten you. The virus has been a concern since 2003. That's 22 years ago now. That's how long the virus has been a concern. You know, concern is part of the fake, right? A public health emergency of international concern. Yeah, remember that one? Yeah. So this one's been a concern since 2003. This virus is so terrifying that over 400 people have died over the 21 or so years since the virus became a concern. 400 people have died over 21 years. And that's just in the United States. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's worldwide. That's right. 400 people in 22 years. And in the United States, the virus was recently associated, according to the article here in the National Pulse, this particular H5N1 virus was recently associated with the re-election of Donald Trump is what it... Oh, no, I'm sorry. It says it was associated with the death of a relatively sick elderly man in Louisiana. And then that didn't scare anybody, so they're looking for... Now, if the price of eggs goes to $20 a dozen, maybe that'll scare enough people. I mean, But the virus is definitely associated with the re-election of Donald Trump. It will be associated with the inauguration of Donald Trump, Lord willing, this coming Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And there you go. So I hope you're panicked now and scared. You certainly should be. But don't be too scared, because Donald Trump is going to take the oath of office with two Bibles. Two Bibles. Just in case the first one doesn't take, or in case one of the Bibles bursts into flames, he'll have a second Bible. Why is Donald Trump going to do the inauguration with two Bibles? Because for Donald Trump, the Bible has always been a reliable prop, and everyone knows when you're dealing with props, it's good to have a backup in case the first one fails. Trump will use his Bible, given to him by his mother in 1955. At the First Presbyterian Church in Jamaica, New York. It is a 1953 Revised Standard Version of the Bible. Kind of appropriate that Donald Trump would be using the Revised Standard Version. In addition to the first prop Bible, Trump will have a second prop Bible called the Lincoln Bible. It's called that because it was used by Abraham Lincoln on March 4th, 1861 for his swearing in. The burgundy velvet-bound book is part of the collection of the Library of Congress. And notice there was no need to refer to which version of the Bible it was. That's because that Bible was made back when we just called it the Bible. And it was just the Bible, and everybody called it the Bible. There weren't 54 editions of the Bible. Anyway, but now, so that's all well and good. But I saw a video, speaking of the inauguration, I saw a video that was released by Roseanne Barr, who's a disgusting, filthy comic, I understand. And in partnership with some white rapper with tattoos on his face. And it was a video, a music video, celebrating the re-election and impending inauguration of evangelical Christianity's and MAGA's favorite presidents. And I'm just telling you, folks, if this video represents how the winning side and the ostensibly conservative Christian side celebrates victory, if this video is any indication of that, then there is certainly a civil war coming very soon. Because, folks, it's not far removed from swearing at each other and giving each other the finger to killing one another. Yeah.
Yeah, here come the rooster. Yeah!
The Weekly Worldview. That's right. I'm your host. Welcome back.
So the
audience has no idea that we sat through over 2 minutes of droning, heroin-addicted just to get to the part about the rooster. I didn't even know we had that record. I thought we stopped buying records in 1989. But apparently that one slipped past the goalie. All right. Now, speaking of drug-addled droning, let's go to Silicon Valley, where Breitbart is reporting that the Google CEO and pagan devil worshiper, Sundar Pichai, will be attending the inauguration of the American president on Martin Luther King Day, coming up probably by the time you listen to this, it will have already taken place. And Sundar Pichai will be on a private jet back to Silicon Valley, or maybe headed down to Mar-a-Lago for the after party.
Who's Sundar?
Sundar Pichai is the CEO of Google. I know. I thought he was like a governor from India or something, but he's not. That's because everyone in Silicon Valley was imported from India for cheap labor, and they took the place over. So be careful who you import for cheap labor. They end up having more kids than you, and before you know it, you're living in a van, and Sundar Pichai is the CEO at Google. All right. Anyway, now he's a leftist, liberal, communist, devil-worshipping pagan, but he will be attending Donald Trump, evangelical Christianity's favorite president. Sundar Pichai, the pagan, liberal, devil-worshipper, will be there. Now, he had planned to co-host a social event with Democrats, resist the Republican agenda event. It was all organized until Sundar realized which way the wind blows and decided instead he'd get on the MAGA wagon because he'll say and do anything because he's a pagan devil worshiping greedy. Anyway, so instead of resisting the Republican agenda, he's going to go to the inauguration, donate $1 million to Donald Trump. Just a million. Hey, that's all it takes, though. I mean, it's the thought that counts. Okay. So it's a gesture at this point. That's right. So, in fact, there were a bunch of Silicon Valley CEOs who were all on board with the anti-Donald Trump, he's a Nazi thing, right? Remember? But now they've all donated $1 million, and they're all going to be at the inauguration. That's right. Jeff Bezos will be there. Mark Zuckerberg. Did I say that right? Mark Zuckerberg will be there. Zuckerberg? I can't pronounce the guy's name. It's like my dad. My dad used to always mispronounce the name of people he did not respect, which was like all of my friends. He mispronounced all of their names for my entire growing up. And then men he didn't respect, he mispronounced their names all the time. And so I'm having a problem with Mark Zuckerberg. Zuckerberg. I'll try it. Mark Zuckerberg will be there. He's the CEO of Google. No, FaceTime. I don't know. He's the Google of something. He's the Google of Facebook or something. CEO. And then the CEO of TikTok, Zhu Zichu, that sounds like an 80s girl band. But he'll be there. Along with devil-worshipping pagan Sundar Pichai, the pagan creepy one with the thick glasses and the two white teeth. I don't know. This is all a bunch of... Anyway. So they're all going to be there, and Don is happy because Don can deal with anyone. He can deal with the Christian evangelical megachurch pastor who he's bamboozled, and he can deal with the pagan devil-worshipping billionaire Google CEO trying to destroy the world. Because it's all about material gain for Don and pretty much everyone in his circle and everyone who will be at the inauguration. I know that annoys everyone. That I've probably lost 99.94% of my listenership because I'm not on the Trump train. Donald Trump disgusts me, and I think it is a sign of the collapse and fall of Western civilization that a relatively dim-witted, vulgar, left-wing celebrity is now the conservative savior of America. Forgive me, I'm sorry. I find him despicable. And all these rats climbing aboard should be a warning sign to everyone who considers themselves a conservative, okay? But no. Instead, alleged conservatives and Christians celebrate the fact that all our rat, dirty rat enemies who swore to our extinction 6 months ago, they're all pretending to be our friends now, and we're supposed to celebrate. Forgive me for being suspicious and repulsed by the entire thing. All right. Now, and so this is where we end up, folks. This is from the Dim New World file, an article that appeared in the Daily Wire, which is what passes for conservatism anymore. So sad. The headline says, "Majority of American parents oppose teaching kids transgender ideology." And so first of all, the fact that the word transgender appears in headlines, that's sad. That's a sad commentary on the state of civilization. The fact that anybody has to even think about any of that is very disturbing and destructive. But the article, the fact that, anyway, let me just read from it. "The majority of parents are opposed to schools teaching their children transgender ideology." That's right. "According to polling," the Daily Wire reports with a big smile on their face, "shows that 75% of parents do not support instruction on sexual orientation, gender identity, and all that creepy, weird, child molesting, pervert stuff." And so the Daily Wire, they're not disturbed by the fact that a quarter of Americans don't mind creepy perverts molesting kids. That's a quarter of the people. Don't mind. But the Daily Wire thinks that 75% is great news. Guess what, Daily Wire? You're wrong. It's not great news. Less than 5% of the nation founded the country. Huh? Changed the course of world history. Less than 5% of the American population. And now we've got a quarter of them who think it's okay to read dirty books to kids and mutilate kids and just be perverts around kids. This is not good. Okay, I'm sorry. And then the reportage from the Daily Wire goes on to say, "This poll shows overwhelming opposition to school personnel withholding information from parents about their child's gender identity at school." There's overwhelming. It's overwhelming. It's close to 80%. Don't want the schools hiding the molestation of children from the parents. Which means almost 20% are okay with it, which is terrifying. It's terrifying. But according to Parents Defending Education, Director of Outreach, Erica, according to her, it's refreshing to see. She says it's refreshing. That's right. People think this ubiquitous trend of facilitating gender transitions behind the backs of parents is complete madness and it needs to stop. So, well, I mean, at least she said it's complete madness, but you can't respond to complete madness by assuming that if 20% of the people are completely mad that we're in decent shape. We're not in decent shape. It's not refreshing to see, Erica. It's horrifying. And you know what's most horrifying about this whole article and everyone at the Parents Defending Education? And everyone at the Daily Wire is that no one recognizes that this is criminal child abuse. Nobody even recognizes that. This is grist for the political mill, and it's something to chuckle about. The complete madness of the child molesters in the schools, those Democrats, molesting the children and mutilating them. It's utter madness. Should anyone be arrested? Well, I'd say anybody should be arrested for it. Well, we've arrested people for it for approximately 5,000 years. But suddenly, we've gone over the cliff. All right. And here's from John Doe, a listener, who can't be identified for obvious reasons. He said, hey, Doug, I just saw the standard disclaimer for our director of personnel for the company and or institution and or other thing that I work for. And here it is. Here's the standardized disclaimer in an email from the director of personnel at an average institution in America today. Institution does not discriminate on the basis of race, color, religion, sex, citizenship, ethnic or national origin, age, disability, medical status, military status, veteran status, marital status, sexual orientation, gender identity or expression, genetic information, ancestry, or any legally protected status in any of its employment practices, educational programs, services, or activities. That's at the end of every email, just in case you were thinking about suing her for not being nice enough. She wants to let you know she's nice. And then John Doe, listener to the Weekly Worldview, asks, what about species identity? What about intergalactic planetary identity? Do they discriminate on that? What about identities from a previous life or a future life not yet identified or expressed? Is it possible? Is there a law against that yet? And if not, shouldn't there be one? Yes, John Doe says, my employer is behind the times. Because you can't be in front of the times when the times they are a-changing so dramatically that we've got a quarter of the population who thinks it's okay for teachers to read dirty books to kids. And 20% think it's okay for teachers to molest and violate and mutilate children without telling their parents, as if it would be okay if they told their parents. I don't even know where that comes from. It's so bizarre to me that I can't even wrap my brain around it. It makes my psyche hurt thinking about it. From all that, listen to this. This is from the Mark of the Beast file. The Israeli government and the Americans and the British and pretty much the whole world have made a deal with Satan. They've taken the mark. National Security Minister over there in Israel. This deal that was made for the hostages is so repulsive and despicable that the National Security Minister threatened to quit the government if the deal was approved. Well, the deal's been approved. I haven't been able to follow up to see if he quit. I hope he did. He said, this is the end of the war before Hamas is beaten. This is what we said we wouldn't do, and we're doing it. Why? Because, well, let's just read. The deal comes after Trump threatened that there would be all hell to pay if the hostages were not released by the time he takes office. That's right. Donald Trump said there will be hell to pay. Well, now they've made a deal, and the hostages will not be released when Donald Trump takes office. And will there be hell to pay? Well, now he made a deal. But it's terrorists that your deal. Well, the deal's done. It's the art of the deal, after all. Come on. You got to be able to make a deal with everyone. Make a deal with the Christian evangelicals. You make a deal with the people over at MSNBC. You make a deal with the terrorists who are raping and slicing the throats of women and children. We got a deal. So it's a great deal. It may be the greatest deal, as a matter of fact. In fact, the deal is so good that 33 hostages will be exchanged for about 1,000 Palestinian terrorists. That's right. But this deal gets even better. The remaining 65 hostages, their status will be addressed later. And best of all in this deal, which may be the greatest deal ever done by the greatest president possibly ever, the exact number of the living hostages is uncertain, which means of the first 33 being released, some of them will not be alive. But that's the best part of the deal, is that we're trading live terrorists for dead bodies. And better than that, we're doing it in negotiation with terrorists, which negotiating with terrorists is probably the most shameful political exercise in the history of all of American history, possibly in world history, which makes this the greatest deal ever and proves even better that manhood in Israel and the Western world is pretty much over. And best of all, get ready. Are you sitting down? Because I know you're tired of winning, but we're winning so bigly that Israel as a secular state is over and America is not far behind. It's the Weekly Worldview. That's right. It's the Weekly Worldview. What's that? Yes. No, it's fine. No, this is the Weekly Worldview. That's the one thing I'm sure of. Everything else is rather dizzying and somewhat uncertain. What with all that. But let's go to Pacific Palisades, where the fires. It's just horrifying. Just horrifying to see what's happened. I watched a video that was posted on one of my right-wing news alternative aggregator conspiratorial disinformation sites. It was from 1961, a news reporter just reporting on how dangerous California was because of just how it is. Just the topography and the weather and just the reality of all of that means it's dangerous to live in California, especially in the hills and valleys surrounding the Los Angeles base, especially in Southern California. Why? Because it catches on fire all the time. And it's caught on fire all the time from the dawn of history. Even the Indians had stories about the fires. So, anyway. So if you're going to govern a state like California, one of the things you might want to think about is fires. Just because you're the government. Your job is to secure the safe infrastructure for the people. And one of those things would be to not allow the infrastructure to burn down along with everybody's houses. But a large reservoir in Pacific Palisades, part of the LA water supply system, was empty. And when confronted with it, the governing officials in Los Angeles had the temerity not to just resign in shame and try to hide forever, right? As soon as a reporter said, "Excuse me, why was the 177 million gallon reservoir empty?" And then a normal person would just say, "I can't believe I let that happen. I'm so sorry. Please don't throw me in prison. I'll do anything. Please let me resign in shame." But no. No, instead, we had Martin Adams, a Department of Public Works official there in Los Angeles, say when asked why the reservoir was empty and the hydrants went dry, he said, "Well, if the Palisades reservoir had been full, you still would have ended up with serious drops in water pressure." To which he was asked, "Well, would the Santa Ynez Reservoir have helped?" He answered, "Yes, to some extent. Would it have saved the day? I don't think so." This is unbelievable that you could even speak I wouldn't have been able to have been found had I been responsible for such an enormous lapse in judgment and catastrophic incompetence. I would have ran to the hills and dug a hole and hid forever. But no, these people stand up and say, well, it would have been good to have an extra 177,000 gallons of water, but would it have saved the day? No. Wow. Okay, so maybe she doesn't realize he, I don't know, it's Martin, it could be a boy, who knows what it is. We know that the three top fire officials in Los Angeles were all gender diverse expressing perverts. That's helpful. But Martin, he says, now Martin maybe not doesn't realize because, you know, he's with the Department of Water. So he may not realize that you actually fight fires one house at a time. Uh-huh. Like with hoses and stuff. And so, yeah, would it have saved the day? Well, maybe for like 500 houses that wouldn't have burned down. Maybe, possibly. But you still would have ended up with a bad fire is what they're saying. So, you know. The Department of, what is it, DWP or DPW? They have it both ways in the article because nobody can spell and nobody edits anything anymore. It's the Department of Public Works. Is it the Department of WP? I don't know who it is. It's the governing officials. It's the Department of Overweight Lesbians with fire hoses and $400,000 salaries, what it is. Anyway, the Department of Public Works is still evaluating the effect of the reservoir being placed offline, and staffers are set to conduct a root cause analysis of the no water in the reservoir. It'll be interesting to find out if they get down to the root cause of why there was no water. Another DWP spokesperson. DWP? What? Anyway, they say, quote, the system was never designed for a wildfire, unquote. This person said this in public, on television, and it was written down. No, that's okay. You have to laugh because otherwise you go insane. These people should be arrested. This is criminal negligence. To design a water system in Southern California that's not designed for a wildfire is gross negligent. And now, in this case, it's negligent homicide. The governor should be in jail. There should be a grand jury. If this was a sane country. Anyway. Listen to this. The Department of Public Works or Public Water, whoever it is there in Los Angeles, the Department of Overweight Lesbians with $400,000 salaries. He said in his closing, in his parting shot, he says that the water department's vast storage and infrastructure provided water to residents without disruptions right up until the fires. I want to remind you that everyone had water as much as they needed, even extra, without any interruptions right up until the fires. Don't anybody forget that. Okay. So we go from San Ynez Reservoir outside of Pacific Palisades, which no longer exists. It's been wiped from the face of the earth. It's been incinerated from the face of the earth. And now we have the wildfires there, by the way, are incinerating structures containing PVC materials releasing toxic dioxins into the air. So just so you leftists, environmental fanatics, tree huggers, dirt worshipers, just so you know that when a house burns down, it's very, very dirty. It's a horrible environmental catastrophe when a house burns down. And now we've had, I don't know how many houses, 10,000, 20,000? I don't know how many houses burned down. Like every house in Altadena, and every house in Pacific Palisades burned down. So that's 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 ecological catastrophes with plastic, all that plastic that you're so afraid of. It was incinerated into little particulates going up in the air. The dioxins that are floating around the air now after this environmental catastrophe known to be carcinogenic, poses health risks, including cancer, reproductive issues, immune system damage. Dioxin-laden ash is now settling on California's Central Valley, a major agricultural hub threatening crops, orchards, and water sources. The region produces a significant portion of the United States' fruits, vegetables, and nuts. But we don't really need those, do we? Fruits, vegetables, and nuts, those are luxuries. Along with water sources, please. What we need are smart cities with zero emissions and everybody working for Amazon and Google and watching TikTok videos. That's what we really need. These nuts and vegetables, they're all overrated. Reproductive, who wants to reproduce? Come on. You think that's a real problem? So we've got the dioxins floating in the air from all the house fires, but the snail darters and the salmon and the shrubs along the coast, they were all protected right up until they were all incinerated and burned to death in the fires. Yeah, we had all the water we needed, and we had protected salmon and shrubs, and the snail darters were all happy right up until the fires burned and incinerated everyone to death. And again, the California government, everyone associated with governing California for the past 50 years should be under investigation by a grand jury. And if indicted, they should be put on trial. And some of them should be put to death. This is criminally negligent homicide. And the fact that no one's willing to say that is indicative of the complete collapse of masculinity in the Western world. That if you say that someone should be put on trial for their life, for negligence that killed dozens of people and destroyed hundreds of billions of dollars worth of property, the fact that you're considered, I don't know, I guess I'm considered insane to say that. No one's allowed to say that. And so what that means is this is going to happen again and even worse. Because human beings, they tend to be as bad as they're allowed to be. They'll generally gravitate to being as stupid, lazy, indifferent, and negligent as they're allowed to be until their entire civilization collapses and is scraped up by whoever comes along who's been actually paying attention. And who's paying attention? Who's paying attention? Well, the Chinese seem to be paying attention. The Indians are paying attention. Sundar Pichai ends up there over at Google. Maybe India will be, or China, or who'll scrape up what's left of the Western democracies after it's all been squandered, and we shall see. Meanwhile, let's move from all of that to something, well, I can't do that because my blood pressure's already through the roof. Here, let's go to the, I can't do that. That'd make me crazy talking about that. Here we go. From the Dim New World file, there's concern in the state of Massachusetts that illegal immigrants are pushing tax-paying Americans out of shelter beds. Massachusetts has a right to shelter law. What is that? That means your state's been taken over by a bunch of communists. That's what it means. That's right. These laws were passed back in 1983. Massachusetts passed right to shelter laws mandating housing for displaced families and pregnant women. Yeah, that's how the communists take over, right? They come in and they tell you how they're going to take care of the displaced families, whatever that means. That would be the people out in the fires there in California. Those are displaced families. By the way, I have a question. How many people from Pacific Palisades are going to be in homeless shelters for any significant period of time? The answer, almost none. Even Altadena, which isn't like a high end, even Altadena people whose houses burned down, do you think they're going to be in the homeless shelters? Maybe for a night or two, right? Because that's a catastrophe. But how many of them do you think aren't going to have friends and family members who are going to put them up until they get their legs back on? How many? Almost none. Zero. Zip. None. Because they don't want to live outside like bums and eat fentanyl for breakfast because they're normal people. But California's overrun with the other kind, who are the ones who are responsible for the fires, by the way. The LA Fire Department investigates thousands and thousands of fires started by vagrants every year, by bums, by derelict drug addicts. It's just that all those fires aren't started at the perfect place and time when the wind is like just happened. And I know there's conspiracies, maybe it's terrorists, and we don't know because who knows who's invaded our country over the past 4 years? 8, 10, 20, 12 million people? Some of them could be terrorists, but it could just be the bums and the derelicts and the vagrants. So who knows? So, but anyway, back to Massachusetts. I'm sorry, I got distracted. In Massachusetts in 1983, the communists took over, mandated housing for displaced families and pregnant women, which was a terrible and embarrassing idea. It was basically the men of Massachusetts admitting they could no longer take care of the women and children. And so we're just going to pay communists to do it. We're going to pay overweight lesbians enormous salaries to bring in NGOs to take care of the women and children because we as men, we just want to watch football and pornography and we can't really take care of them anymore. And this is 40 years ago. This is 1983 when the communists took over Massachusetts. So they have a right to shelter law, which now means illegal immigrants are filling up the shelters. There's one shelter called, listen to this, it's a shelter in Massachusetts called the Marlboro Holiday Inn Shelter, which means it used to be a Holiday Inn, and it still is, but it's mostly occupied by derelicts, bums, and illegal immigrants, and the government pays the Holiday Inn. And the guy at the Holiday Inn, he's like, why should I have to put up with customers? I can just have the bums in here. The government writes me a check. It's awful. It's terrible. It's embarrassing. Massachusetts spent about $1 billion this fiscal year so far to accommodate migrants utilizing hotels, is how they put it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's communists paying off greedy businessmen who don't realize they're destroying the country because they're getting a fat paycheck. It's all despicable. Anyway, this has left local citizens without access to these facilities. And that doesn't mean local citizens want to stay at the Holiday Inn because locals don't stay at the Holiday Inn, right? It's other bums who are Americans are not able to get in to the free housing because the illegals have come in. And the people here at the National Pulse have the temerity to say that the illegals are pushing out American taxpayers. Hey, American taxpayers don't stay in homeless shelters. People staying in homeless shelters don't pay taxes. My goodness, does anybody even know what's going on anymore? Anyway, is there anything else on this story? I don't think I could say anything further. Anyway. That's the dim new world. And anyway, we know what's going on. We are paying attention. There are some of us still out here who know what's going on. Never thought our love would last for so long. Time and time and again, I thought that you would be gone. Still we kept on hanging on. I guess it's meant. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. That's right. We still love you, America, despite your pathetic. Yes. Oh, that was burning like a flame. I didn't get it. It's been too long since I. All right. Okay. Meanwhile, so we all remember Derek Chauvin, who's rotting in prison.
Yeah.
Mostly because he's a jerk, I think. A lot of people said he wasn't a very nice guy. He wasn't friendly. He wasn't sensitive. And he very well may be a jerk in real life. I don't know the guy. I never met him. But I just remember that Patrick Floyd, what was his name? I can't remember. George Floyd. I just remember when George Floyd died and everybody said that cop killed him. I remember thinking and saying, wait a second. Have you people, don't you remember Rodney King? Is anybody even paying attention? Do you know that the communists set up these videos to make it look like the cops did things Duh, hello? But no! No! Everybody just jumped on board and said, boy, that guy murdered that guy. And it turns out he didn't murder the guy. Turns out that the guy died of a drug overdose. And that the kneeling on the neck for 9 minutes that everyone accused him of, that's all false, fake, phony. He was using a maximum restraint. Anyway, listen to this. 14 current and former police officers from the Minneapolis Police Department believe that Minneapolis Police Department Assistant Chief Katie perjured herself when she testified in court that the restraint method Derek Chauvin used to subdue drug-addicted, dying George Floyd in May of 2020. She testified it was not a part of the Minneapolis Police Department. She'd never seen that before. They had no idea what that ever even was. She testified at the trial that the cop was sentenced to 25 years or something, right? So many of the cops now are signing, there's a lawsuit. And now 14 police officers say the neon neck restraint Chauvin employed was in fact trained under the maximal restraint technique. A restraint the Minneapolis Police Department taught and allowed up until 2023. And I covered a story about a cop who said, yes, I know this restraint. We all use this restraint. It's when you have a guy who outweighs you by like 150 pounds and you want to make sure he doesn't get up off the ground. Which sometimes you're in that position as a cop. And George Floyd was a great big guy. Derek Chauvin, a jerk, not a nice guy, whatever, did not outweigh George Floyd. And so he put him in this maximum restraint. And George Floyd, unfortunately, succumbed to a drug overdose while you happen to be on the guy's neck. Very unfortunate for Mr. Chauvin. Anyway, these 14 statements by these cops who I'm wondering where they were during the trial. They were waiting to get their pension during the trial. Oh, I see. Oh, such brave. America's finest. So anyway, there's these 14 statements were submitted by lawyers representing Alpha News, which is where I'm reading this story from. Alpha News. Alpha News is being sued in a defamation lawsuit brought by Katie Blackwell, who perjured herself in court in front of God and everybody, and then has the temerity to sue the news reporters who called her out on it. And so now the truth is going to come out. So accidentally stumble backwards into the truth because the deviant, I don't even know what to call Katie Blackwell. I don't even know what to call her. The bureaucrat class have no fear of anything, and they think they can actually sue the people telling the truth. That's how bad it is. But the truth might actually come out. In her lawsuit, lying, treasonous, backstabbing bureaucrat scum, Katie Blackwell alleges that Alpha News, their documentary film, The Fall of Minneapolis, which we've covered here on the show, and the book, wrongly accused Blackwell of lying. Well, Ms. Blackwell, you may be foist upon your own petard here, I hope so, when the truth comes out, because she probably counted on the Black Lives Matter, George Floyd effect, the whole woke hysteria. She expected that to never end. Well, guess what, sweetie? It's over. And we're all about sick of you people. Every one of you. We're tired of the communists dressing everything up in racism and then rubbing our face in it. That's over with. All right. Now, meanwhile, we have, if you thought that was disgusting and despicable, listen to what the editor at Life News has done to the pro-life movement. It has degenerated to the point of literally just an industry, a fundraising industry, and a virtue signaling network of phony baloney Christians and politicians. It's despicable. Life News, Steve Ertelt over there reports that a major medical organization, the American Academy of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, they call themselves the APLOGs. Yep, that's right. The American Academy of Pro-Life Obstetrics and Gynecologists. He calls them pro-life doctors who want Trump's nominees to put major limits on abortion pills. That's right. The American Academy of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists has proposed that the nominees from Donald Trump be asked to commit to enforcing safety regulations around the abortion pill. Nominees should also be asked to state a gestational limit that they would impose on abortion. So Steve Ertelt and Life News have just endorsed the legality of the abortion pill and the legality of almost all abortions. That's the pro-life move. That's Life News, ironically enough. Supports most abortions and the fact that the abortion pill is legal. And they're cheering a bunch of pro-abort doctors who have some exceptions for some children. Steve Ertelt is supporting them as pro-life. And Steve Ertelt, by the way, makes his living, feeds his face every day and his family and his retirement, and takes his vacations on money he raises claiming to be against the killing of innocent people. And he's a liar. He's despicable. The Applog, who want gestational limits, right, imposed on abortions that they're okay with. And then the abortion pill that they're okay with, they want some regulations around that. They're okay with all the killing. They just don't want it to be so ugly, dirty that they feel bad about it at night. And they've got like a legalistic, here's where we draw the line. If you draw the line here, we won't feel so bad. In fact, we could send out fundraising letters. We could raise money for our organization. We can have a meeting once a year at a really nice hotel and eat a lot of nice food and drink some fine wine and champagne. And we could even have Steve Ertelt come and give the keynote speech and tell us how pro-life we are and how wonderful we are. Because these priorities, according to Applog, the priorities, meaning regulate that abortion pill that we think should be legal, regulate those abortions that we're okay with, these priorities are non-negotiable for us, Applog's letter said. Non-negotiable. You're already negotiating. This whole thing is a negotiation. It's the art of the deal. This is the new conservative America, where it's conservative to be liberal and make a deal with the devil and the killers and the murderers. And listen to Applog says that they are advancing protections for life-affirming medicine. That's the new one. It's no longer pro-life. Throw out the term pro-life. They realized they had bastardized that term so badly that they just couldn't keep saying it with a straight face. I mean, these are legalists. And legalists always need... Adolf Hitler was a legalist, by the way. Everything he did, he made sure he passed a law, made it legal first. And Steve Ertelt and the guys at the Applog, they're like Hitler. They're legal. They're legalists. And they're okay with some killing. The killing that they're okay with, they just want to make sure that it's nice, clean, and white, and neat, and clean. And so the new term isn't going to be pro-life. It's life-affirming. That's the new term, life-affirming, which means... nothing. I mean, well, it means whatever you want it to mean. It means, well, we're not woke. We're life-affirming. So we're not Democrats. We're MAGA. We're life-affirming, which means we're willing to capitalize on the guilt and shame surrounding the issue of child killing and make ourselves feel better about it and virtue signal each other in a non-woke way, which is the better way to do it. And we get tattoos. And we listen to rap songs. And we think Roseanne Barr is a genius. And the exceptions we make to what is an acceptable abortion and what is an unacceptable abortion, that's life-affirming. It's our exceptions to when it's okay or not okay to kill children. So we have exceptions on one side, we have exceptions on the other, and that is life-affirming. And there you have it, folks. The pro-life movement is no more. It's now the life-affirming movement. And that. Okay? And so I hope you're all really happy with that, because Donald Trump is a life-affirming president. Perhaps the most life-affirming president since George Washington. George Washington was life-affirming. That's right. So in the meantime, let's go to reason number 1,267 to get or keep your children out of the government schools, particularly in the state of New Jersey. In fact, you should do everything you can to keep yourself and anyone you know out of the whole state of New Jersey. Because it's run by communist tyrants, dictators, child molesters, perverts, and creeps. And then if you manage to get out of New Jersey, good luck finding a place that's not like that. So, anyway, New Jersey has passed a new law that will eliminate basic reading, writing, and mathematics test requirements for public school teachers. And that's not the sad part. The sad part is that... I know. There's going to be no reading, writing, or mathematics test requirements for public school teachers. That's right. We don't want to discriminate anyone against anyone who can't read or write or do math. Because if they want to identify as a teacher, they should be allowed to identify
how
as
are
a
you
teacher.
Gonna pay tax?
So, how are you going to pay taxes?
Yeah, I mean, if you cannot do math.
Oh, don't worry. The government will just send you a bill, and then you don't have to do any math to pay your taxes. Come on, we'll do that for you. They take care of the unsheltered families and children and women, by the way. And so the saddest part of this is not that New Jersey wants their public school teachers. Well, the saddest part is not that New Jersey no longer cares if the school teachers can read or write. That is sad. But the sadder part is that New Jersey has public school teachers and that they're passing laws and regulations around what it takes to teach children how to read and write, which, I mean, generally, if you're a functioning citizen, you should be able to teach your own kid how to read and write. And if you don't teach your own kid how to read and write, I mean, just forget it. It's over. It's the end of the country. Anyway, this new law barring discrimination against non-readers and non-writers from teaching went into effect on January 1st in an effort to address the shortage in public school teachers. We don't have enough teachers. It's because we have these rules that they need to be able to read and write. Anyway, how do you not be able to read and write? How does that happen in America circa 2025? I don't know. The teachers union called such tests barriers to certification. And there's the biggest, saddest part, is that in New Jersey, in order to teach a kid to read, people think they have to be certified. Actually, all you have to do is know how to read and then love the kid, which that's the hard part. Is the loving of the kid. You can't hire people to do that. No, and you can't have bureaucrats. All right, so New Jersey's elimination of three of the most important subjects is likely to reduce overall quality of teachers in the New Jersey school system, according to amgreatness.com. Really? Their government already... The teachers' government education already... reduce the overall quality of teachers in the New Jersey public school systems. Anyway, adults do not need to be certified. They need to be educated, is all. There's a lack of that going around. And they need to fear God. And they need to actually love the children, which is what parents are good for and which teachers and bureaucrats are not good for. If you want your health and human services, it's better to get them from a human rather than a bureaucrat. All right. And that's the Weekly Worldview for this week. Thank you for tuning in to the Lord Terry. We'll return next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.